I always say that doing less is doing more. The less categories you have, the more profitable you be. And the greatest lesson in business in front of us that everybody can go and check out, study Chick-fil-A and study McDonald's. Average McDonald's does $2.6 million per location. Average Chick-fil-A does $5.2 million per location. McDonald's have, I believe, 44 items on the menu. Chick-fil-A has 11. So they are so efficient. The amount of profit they have, Chick-fil-A beats McDonald's, Starbucks, and Subway, I believe, by profit. All of them combined.
Hey, everybody, what's up? Welcome to the Roofer Coach Podcast, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and we did have John DeLoria here, my co-host, a few minutes ago, but all of a sudden he says, whoa, I forgot. I've got to take my kids to basketball. I'm like, really? So you got a solo intro? Show must go on. So I'll just introduce our guest today, and that is Dimitri. Everybody knows him by his first name, Dimitri. It's kind of like Madonna or Sting or Bono. Well, I definitely dated myself with those guys. Dimitri has all kinds of things happening. He's got a great YouTube channel. He's got directory. He's got his roofing school. So I would assume that all our listeners are familiar with them. If they're not, go check them out. But we get into all kinds of things. We talk about his business. He built a business from scratch, went through and sold it successfully. So that's a great story. We talk about what's working for lead generation today, how to make profit. And I think we're on the same page as far as it's really about making profit, not necessarily the sales growth, but you've got to be profitable. You hear me talk about that all the time. But let's see what happened last week. Normally, I would talk to John, ask him what's happening. He was telling me that leads are a little slow. Business is a little off. So I think everybody's kind of feeling that a little bit. So we'll have to get more of an update from him. For me, well, a couple of days ago, I'm walking up my stairs, and all of a sudden, pop, I tear my calf muscle. What the hell, man? I'm just walking up the stairs. I'd like to say that it was, some wild story, but it's not. So that sucks. Getting old is not for the meek, believe me. I'm supposed to be going back skiing in Vail, Colorado next week. I'm still going to go. I guess I'll have to do some deck skiing instead. But looking forward to that. But I love what I do these days. I've told the story. Sold my business, retired, got bored, started the podcast, and now I've been working with roofing contractors, coaching and consulting with them in their business. And I love doing that. And the great thing about it, I can do it from anywhere. Back in Vail, I'll take my mic and do the podcast back there. And I usually have, I'll have a couple of two contractors in the morning that I work with over Zoom. It's great. And this is what I've always done. And this is what I think is important, where we used to spend a lot of time in Maui. And I call these my Maui reports. And I was really into the numbers of my business. I was a commercial roofing contractor for 30 years in California. One of the main things that was important to me and how I built my business was to be able to take time off to travel, be with my kids, family, all of those things. And, this is why I talk about the 2-week vacation as part of our coaching program. You've got to be able to take time off away from your business. And if you're telling me I couldn't do that, my business would fall apart. You don't have a business. You've got a job, and you've got to be able to remove yourself from your business at some point. You don't do that the first couple of years. It takes a long time, but that's the direction that we go. And you could take off time. And what I like to stay in touch with my business, so I'm always I was always, you know, wasn't really working. It's just managing the business. And I would get the reports that I need, the KPIs, key performance indicators that are important. Whatever that is, if they're not important, don't follow them. But I wanted to know where we were on the jobs, what our backlog was, what the progress is. And I could see, and we'd be doing, five, six commercial projects at a time. And I could see where we were on each and every one of those jobs and how we were staying on track, if it's going over, because we had all W-2 employees, so we're tracking man days. And I'm looking at that, and I can see that, hey, if we've used 60% of our labor and we're 40% done with the job, we got a problem. And we call a timeout and say, what the hell is going on? How are we going to pick up this time? Well, we can still do that, and we do that by job costing. If you're not job costing, you have no idea. So you're doing the job, and you're saying what happens, happens. Well, you're right. If you lose your ass on the job, it's too late to do anything about it. So this is what we call managing the project. And that's a daily thing. We track the gross profit margin on every job. We have got a budget, and we've got an actual, and we've got a variance. So I can see where we are on the projects. I take a look at our sales pipeline. I can see where all our sales guys are. I'm able to go in and quickly see how many leads came in, how many quotes we put out, how many sales we have, and we can make projections based on that, based on the number of quotes we've got on the street, because we know what our close rate's going to be over time, and we track all those numbers, and I can see that, and this is what is so important in your business. I track the cash, and I don't care who you are. This business is about cash flow. You've got to have your cash coming in, you've got to be in a strong position. And you have your receivables. And if you're a commercial contractor, you're going to have receivables. Hopefully you don't, as a residential contractor, that the last guy down the ladder picks up the check. But you've always got to stay on your receivables. We've got 30, 60, 90. We track those. They better be in 30 days when you're going to collect. And you've got to constantly stay on top of that and bring in your cash. Do not let anything get into 60. And if it goes into 90, chances are you're not going to get it. And the way that we track this is simple. It's called the current ratio. We look at our balance sheet, and we can see our cash position, cash in the bank, receivables, inventory, perhaps if we're using that. And we define that by things that we can turn into cash. The definition is really within 1 year, but you're going to need to collect that cash. And you have a ratio of what your payables are. What do you owe? You owe your suppliers. Maybe you owe taxes or whatever that might be. You've got to always have a strong cash position and have a hell of a lot more cash than you need to pay your bills. And the way you do that is make profit. And guys that don't have strong cash flow, I can see that, hey, the only way you're going to get ahead of this and be able to make your payroll every week without sweating it is by making profit. This is what we call knowing the numbers. Which numbers are the ones that are important? We track those. So every morning I would get this report, and I could look at that, and it would take me, about 15 minutes to get a good feel of where we are on all this. And then whether I'm sending emails, calling the guys, whatever, and just seeing what's going on and how we can improve. Had great people working for me because, as I say, you are always recruiting, you are always training, and you're always retaining. So if you build a great workforce management team that has been trained, being held accountable, understands what their job is, well, I get the hell out of the way and let them do it. So, and it works. It worked for everybody. And this is how we want to build a business of value, because it doesn't rely on you. And you can take time off, do whatever you want, but you have options, and that's what's important. But there I go again, getting off topic, and I want to get back into our interview with Dimitri. And by the way, Dimitri's a funny guy. You know, you don't see it on a lot of his videos, but I told him, I said, you know, you don't see a lot of Russian stand-up comics, you know, so maybe, you know, you got a side gig going here. But before we get into our interview, I want to thank our sponsors. And why you want to listen to this is because the way that I choose my sponsors is they got to bring value to our listeners. And there's a reason why I partner with these businesses. And, you know, we with our coaching program, we'll try to stay on the same page and we use the same applications, you know, as our group, our masterminds. And it's just a lot smoother. We can talk about this, what problems we're having with particular apps. And, you know, the first one that we talk about is Ruby Receptionists. And why they're so important is because everything starts with that first contact. Finally, we got somebody to call us or make contact with us. And we've got to be able to make that great first impression. And that's what Ruby Receptionist does. They will answer the phone with a professional, friendly voice. They get the information and they help us pre-qualify those prospects, whether they're in our target range, our ideal customer. And we're going to spend time going out there and seeing these people. But if they're looking for a different service or in a different area, you know, we don't need to talk to them. And that's what Ruby does. So go check them out. They've got a very low cost program to get you started and really help you out. If John DeLorio is here, I'd say, John, I know you use Ruby. How do you like him? But he's not, but he uses them. So go to get.ruby.com/roofercoach and use that link. You'll get some little benefits and so forth, but they'll talk to you, make sure they take care of you and find out what they're about, but they will help you tee up that sale. And next we've got Peak Leads. And if you're a commercial contractor or looking at getting into the commercial space, you want to talk with peakleads.io. And they will get you on those hard to get on roofs, the ones that you can deal with the owner, the decision maker. And this is what's so great. This is exactly what we did in our business, because that was our ideal customer. They get you on those buildings, and you're not just putting in a number and having somebody up the chain make the decisions. These are the decision makers, and that's what I like about Peak Leads. They've got to do this through technology. They got a great program. It's awesome. So go check out peakleads.io. I just had a contractor yesterday sign up with them. They're doing their onboarding today. And I've got a number of guys that work with them, and they get you leads. They will get you on those roofs. But you can have all the leads in the world. If you can't close them, it doesn't mean anything. And this is what the sales transformation group does. They will teach you how to sell, how to sell with confidence, and they will improve your close rate. And this is what is so important coming into slower times, is that it's going to be more difficult. You're going to have fewer opportunities, and you've got to make the best of those. And that means you've got to learn to sell professionally. And if you've got a sales team, you need to learn how to manage your team professionally. They will teach them to sell. They'll teach you how to manage, or your sales manager, how to get the best out of your team. It's so important, and even more so, as I said, if things start slowing down, and it certainly looks like it is going to slow down. So check them out at salestransformationgroup.com/roofershow. I guess we'll have to change that one around. But these guys are great. Ryan Groth. I'm sure you heard of him. He's been around forever. I've known Ryan. These guys take care of business, and they've got a great program, number of programs, and I'm sure there's something there for you. So check out the salestransformationgroup.com/roofershow. Set up an appointment to talk with one of them, and you'll see what they're all about. All right, finally. Let's get into our interview with that funny guy, Dimitri. Dimitri, great of having you on the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Happy Monday, guys.
And to you. This is the first time we've met, so I'm excited about asking some of these questions, getting to know you better, watch some of your videos. Caught a few this morning, actually, so I'm ready to go. The first thing is, you know, I think we have similar morning routines, and routine, I think, is really important. I see you jumping in these ice baths and, you know, going down to the gym, lifting some big weights and so forth, and kind of the same thing. Why don't you tell us about that? And don't you think morning routine is really important to get you going?
Well, it's you have to prep for the day. And I was listening to a Russian billionaire interview 2 years ago. And he was starting every day in the gym, and interviewer asked him, why does he do it? And he said that, I'm a billionaire, I have hundreds of companies, whatever. He said, I need a strong body to support what I do. And, you know, even when I was running my roofing business, which I don't do anymore, I can tell you that after workout, like, you will have, like, you can always tell if person is working out. Like, if you've been in the gym and you work at the bar later, you can tell. If a person, you know, it adds a pump, it adds energy to yourself. When I go, if you wake up and go straight to work, your energy level going to be way lower. Your productivity, I believe, will be lower. Like, I start 5:30 at CrossFit. Like, the best days of my work days are after, you know, sauna, workout, full session. Because by 8 o'clock, I'm already pumped. I'm already ready to go. And the best part, actually, is if you're serious about fitness and you're tracking it, I have about 30 to 40 personal records per year. That's once in, you know, almost every week sometimes, every 2 weeks, right? So 2-3 times a month, you'll run faster mile. Like last night, I had a personal record by a minute on assault bike, 100 calories, 4 minutes and 34 seconds. That's amazing feeling. When you lift the heaviest weight in the morning, like, imagine this, you go to the gym and, you know, my goal for this year is clean and jerk 315 pounds. So when I did like 3 or 5, imagine starting your day when you already won major milestone. You won, you got a personal record at something, and now everything else is easier. You already conquered something. Like, amount of endorphins that come into your blood and mentally have a feeling that you still improve. I'm 39. I'm a not young guy. I'm not in my 20s. If you study biology, everybody's telling you that 35 and later, you are losing what? Testosterone every year goes down, right? But here I am improving every 2 weeks. Something major. I run faster, I lift heavier. And how does that not transfer to your work? When you come to work and you just achieved something, it's a huge achievement, accomplishment. And I recommend everyone, if you're not working out in the morning, try it. You'll never be the same.
My measurement of a good day is if I can get my pants on by myself. So that's a big, big thing for me. If I can get going, get out, you know, all fours, slide into the hot tub and try to get these, you know, loosened up a little bit. I'm a little older than you here by probably 3 times. John, how about you? How do you get going in the morning? I see all this stuff. Everybody's, you know, in the gym, you're pumping all this iron, man. I'm like, whoa.
I mean, I can't agree more. I mean, because of a lot of your influence, Dimitri, we just started doing ice baths in the morning, like did it this morning. And the first thing that I do, I hate doing. And once I do it, it's something that I did that I accomplished that I absolutely hated doing. And I overcame it. You know, there's a lot of, you know, medical benefits to the endorphins, et cetera. But just the fact that I got up and did something that was really hard to do, it changes my whole morning and the whole day. I mean, and I've only been doing it for a few days, and I can already tell a huge difference in every single day.
Oh, 100%.
It's called eating our frog, you know, and you start off in the morning doing one thing that you just don't like doing. You know, some of us don't want to, it's a struggle to go to the gym, struggle to get up and, you know, start moving like that. I agree. It's all good. Well, speaking of old guys, I was listening to one of your podcasts or videos or something, and you were talking about, you know, these coaches that haven't been operating their business in years and so forth, that they have no right to be out there coaching, you know, and I go, is he talking to me? I said, you know, I think he's got something there. So I hooked up with John, who was actually one of my first coaching clients, I don't know what, six years ago, and you know, brought on this new blood. And I think it's really added to our program, not only the podcast, which we love doing, but also our coaching program, because John's in that, you know, in the trenches every day. He's doing it great with automations and so forth. And, you know, I've been there, done it kind of, and, you know, have some experience to show. So I want to thank you for that. Giving me that tip. That was a great call, and nothing personal there, but well, let's get into our topics for today, because I've got a ton of questions. I mean, it's a great opportunity to talk with you. You work with so many clients, you know what's going on out there. We want to focus on our market, which I think you said was the same. You know, our avatar is really startups to about $8 million in sales. And that's what we like to focus on, because I was a larger contractor and always had a consultant that came in on site, and we worked with them a lot. And I think that's important. You really need to have somebody come out and work with your team and so forth. And, you know, I've done a lot of traveling over the years, and you're going everywhere. You must be traveling, you know, going somewhere three times a week. That's why we kind of just do it over Zoom, and that's working for us. But let's talk about what's going on. Where do you see things going? You know, times are changing, and, you know, the economy may be slowing down. What do you see, and what should our contractors be thinking of? What are some of the threats that we've got out there? How do we deal with that, if we can get into that conversation?
I think marketing changes a lot. If you're in the roofing business, it's getting harder and harder to get attention to yourself, because there's a lot of noise. It's easier than ever to throw yourself on the internet and to put yourself in front of people, but it's harder than ever to actually grab attention, because attention span is everybody's enemy. I mean, everybody's scrolling. There's so many options average consumer has, and nobody wakes up in the morning thinking about buying a roof or buying a car. And I don't agree that everyone is your client. It's, you know, Grant Cardone mentality. Everybody's talking about like, mentality of who has my money. I don't believe in it. Like your client, I mean, how many searches per month do we have in your city? So if you live, you know, I live in Minneapolis, 5 million people, we might have, I don't know, 100,000 jobs. Like how many jobs per month does your city even have? So let's say it's 1,000 roofs getting built in a single month. So you have to ask yourself, how to target to those people who are searching for it, how to be in front of them. And it's hard. You have to be creative. You have to study consumer behavior. You have to find something that clicks with potential customers. But also, sales game is changing, because here's what I see happening this year, and it's going to continue in the next few years. Roofs are getting very, very expensive. I see more comments than ever about price, like on my videos, because I look at my channel, at my data, and when I make videos like top 7 things your roofer will not tell you and how much does roof cost and stuff, I see now that homeowners coming and they're saying like, this is BS. I got quoted 3 years ago, $15,000, and today I'm getting $30,000. So that's a sales game change, right? And what's going to happen if you look at Europe, if you look at other markets globally, roof is unbearable cost. It's not like buying a car that everybody has to have. That's why if you go to like England, France, you see a lot of patches, a lot like here in the United States where roofers are spoiled. Oh, missing shingle. No, insurance is going to pay for it because you have $60 billion State Farm who has to spend a couple billion dollars on repairs, right? So we don't have a lot of repairs. In Europe, because of the cost, it makes no sense. So repair, repair, repair. So now what I see happening in the market, like when the price is so high, that people actually start thinking about how much it costs, like they can't just write a check. When price was, you know, when I was starting 2013, 2014, I mean, we're talking about average ticket $9,000-$10,000. I was all first 2 years, I was a retail contractor. So 10 grand, people are writing checks. And I was thinking to myself, because I was poor at the time, right? Like I moved in, you know, I'm making 60K a year. Who has $10,000 to write a check for a roof? Well, now it's $30,000. So inflation ate a lot of it. If you look at the car market, like, you know, the same with the trucks, you know, average truck now is like, what, 80 grand? Used to be 30. So because economy changed so much, you have to be really good at sales because selling $30,000 job, it's not selling $10,000 job. Competition is still there. Labor shortages taking place. So roofing contractor has less average than he had 5 years ago, like way less. He cannot leverage his relationships with suppliers like he used to because suppliers don't give a crap. Like they know there's three of them and you have to buy from them and you cannot buy direct no matter how big you are. Crews kind of spoiled and they don't care. There's no loyalty between among crews. They'll work for anyone who pays them. And then what do you have? Sales guys don't have loyalty. So the only leverage you have in this business is your marketing. If you can generate leads, that's the only, the real leverage in business, in this business. Because if you, it's new oil. If you have it, if you've done something that generates leads, generates attention, if you have assets online, if you have website that's number one on Google, if your phone rings 24/7, maybe you've been in business for 15 years, maybe you have genius marketing campaign, like companies like Apple Roofing, Eustace Roofing, who are local leaders and they established, everybody knows them, that's leverage. Nobody can take that away from you. You know, you're going to keep dominating that market. You're going to keep selling because you are the leader. And I think you have to, if you want to win in this game in 2023, you have to do that. Like, you know, door knocking is nice and great and it's easy to sell insurance claims, but you have to have storms. And look at Colorado, look at Chicago, when they don't have 2-3 years, no storms. You know, I would say 60-70% of contractors out of business, close their doors because they have only one business model and they don't have anything else. So I think if you're not creative, if you don't have charisma, if you don't have brand, you will be eliminated in the next few years because I don't believe that we are in commodity business. Everybody says that, you know, we're a commodity business, people will be replacing, we're recession proof. I don't believe we're recession proof because I remember 2011, 2012, a lot of my buddies were siding installers, like here in Minnesota. Guess what? They all became truck drivers because they're not going to bring 20K home. Like I have a friend who used to make 140, 150,000 a year installing siding. And then I think in 2012, he brought 20K home. That's not a recession-proof business.
Yeah.
No. People not going to replace their roofs. People smart. They're going to take the insurance money even, and they will finance their house because it's a smart decision. I mean, I would do that. If I lost my job or my wife lost my job and my roof got approved by insurance, guess what? I'm spending that money on food, on bills. I'm not spending it on my roof.
That's right.
So we're not recession proof. And when everything gets bad, I think market will eliminate a lot of bad, weak players, boring guys. All the boring guys, all of those guys who don't take their brand seriously, they'll be out.
Most of our listeners, they've never been in business longer than 10 years. So all they've seen is this kick-ass economy. I mean, there's never been anything like this and may never be again. I've been through a number of recessions and they are ugly. I mean, this party is going to end at some point. And what happens is that pie is going to start shrinking and you've got to be very creative to get a bigger piece, to hold your market share, to hold your sales up. I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of weak players taken out, which is always a good idea. And you've got to show your differentiation. If you're going to sell roofs as a commodity, I mean, that's a race to the bottom. You're never going to be successful. So it's more important than ever that we attract quality leads, that we're clear on who that ideal customer is, who we want to work for, and how do we go after them. John, we were talking, I know that you've really cut back on the number of quotes that you've made, but your sales have increased. What's up with that?
I've intentionally pre-qualified harder. So that's been the biggest thing. Learning how to say no without having to say no is really helpful. Either using Ruby Receptionist or using our forms online on our website, asking those questions, making the prospect actually jump through the hoops of answering those questions. I mean, we were doing 3 or 4 times more estimates the first three years in business than I do now. And we sell more at a higher profit margin now because of the pre-qualification process. Now, I will say, you're going to have to really, really fine tune that as we go into this recession for 2023 and really try to, like you said, Dimitri, be really good at sales and really do every possible little thing better than the next contractor. I was actually doing a repair myself on Friday, and I was on the roof, and I was looking around this neighborhood. The homes are, you know, your typical like kind of lower middle class, all vinyl sidings, just spec homes everywhere. And I was looking at all the roofs, and you could see speckled throughout. There's probably 150, 200 homes, you know, new roof over here, here, here. And there was a storm in that little town earlier this year. So I figured, you know, door knockers, et cetera. Well, the 10 houses that I could see around me had significant wind damage. And so deduction would say that insurance didn't pay, or they did pay and the homeowners are keeping the money, just like you just said. Almost certainly that's the case in that neighborhood, because I know many friends who've been in this area door knocking. And so they weren't able to get there's two problems. Either the insurance is not paying, which is a problem because there's significant damage, or if it is being paid for, then the homeowners are too worried about their personal finances. So that's a huge deal. Showing I mean, we're talking about 10, 20, 30, 40 shingles gone from these roofs, and they're not fixing their roofs. So it's a big problem. I mean, that's what I've seen throughout this whole year, actually. It's just gotten worse since probably, I don't know, even May, June. It was just like that. Probably about 40 to 45% of my estimates of roofs that we have given out, the homeowners never did anything. It's what you said at the beginning of this recording is people are like, well, 3 years ago I had this price and now I have this price. And so we were in Athens and Savannah. So I drove back to Athens like I do pretty much every month. And I was driving by these houses that I had given estimates to earlier this year, 3, 4, 5 months ago, never did anything. I saw 3 homes that need roofs desperately. And these are really nice homes and they're not doing the roof. And they're just sticker shock, not going to do it at all. And before you got on, I was talking to Dave about one of my friends in Atlanta. He's been through the 2008-09-10 recession. And so he's about between 15 and 16 years old business, and they worked their mostly storm, but worked themselves up consistently throughout the years. And they did about 8 to 9 million in sales last year. and he wouldn't even tell me what he did this year. So it's a big, and that's in Atlanta. He's staying in Atlanta, you know, very, very well respected company. So it's definitely slow. So I say all that because you made a marketing video and you talked about percentages of what people should spend for their marketing. As people, should we be smarter? Obviously, we need to be as smart as we can with the money that we have. If the sales are lower, we need to be, that's what I'm always interested in. Is I'm a big marketing spender, but I've made a lot of mistakes in the past of spending just to spend, not necessarily hiring a marketing agency, but I know you talked about several things in the video. Can you recap some of those things you talked about of the best way to spend money in marketing next year?
Sure. I would say everything works. You can get jobs absolutely from everywhere. Like, you know, stop saying, like people say, you know, oh, Yelp doesn't work or Facebook doesn't work. Like maybe it didn't work for you, but it works for other people. Like, you know, almost any form of marketing, you will find people who it did not work for. Flyers dead. Well, I would argue there are companies who are killing it on flyers. Billboards are dead. Well, if you live in a certain area, I mean, rural Michigan, smaller town, Wisconsin, and you have three billboards, you might have better return on investment than Google, right? Because it's, you know, you have to study your city. You have to, like, you have to be a consumer. Ask yourself, how do you consume? Like, ask yourself, how do you make buying decisions? What do you like? Where do you go? If you drive on the road and you see a huge billboard, like GT Roofing in Houston, I mean, they own like two huge billboards, and one is right by their office. I mean, it's major highway. They're like 2 or 3 hours from Houston. It's a smaller town. They dominate that city, but they do a lot of things right in the city because you have to be part of the community. And, you know, I would market company very different if I would be in Atlanta versus California versus Boston. So, like, what I tell people is find what's popular. Like the most popular radio station may be a huge thing. Yelp, like for example, Yelp, California is huge. And I know like where I've been. I've been in Boston, met a contractor. He's killing it in Yelp. So he pays Yelp. And you can see, here's how you can know when it works and what doesn't. You go to the platform and you see how many reviews contractors have on it. So if you have a contractor on Yelp in your town who has 300 reviews, ask yourself, how did he get it? You know, 300 Yelpers wrote him a review. That's 300 jobs. Well, if you know the numbers, if 25% of his clients from Yelp are writing reviews, he got 1,200 jobs from it. Because only fraction of them wrote them a review. So think about it. But now in Minneapolis, you know, the busiest roofer on Yelp might have 10 reviews. So it's dead. So for you, $10,000 per year on Yelp in Boston could be the best money ever spent. For me, it's a waste of money. So you have to study your market. Now, what works, what doesn't work? I'll tell you what doesn't work and what everybody thinks works. Viral videos don't work. And let me explain. Everybody chasing viral videos. I hate TikTok with a passion. I still do it. I still, because it's a practice. It's a content. You have to be everywhere, right? But here's the problem with the TikTok. You get like, and I have videos that have million plus, but they don't do anything to you. Like I have my fittest roofer contest holding bundle. I just signed up for TikTok. We went to Las Vegas for IRE Expo. I have a booth. And I'm like, let's just do it and film it. I film on my phone this guy holding a bundle of shingle for 2 minutes, posted on TikTok, within 3 days have like 1.6 million views. For most people, it means so much to them. Like, oh, I went viral. All right, how does it transfer to business? How many jobs will you sell? What will you do? Stop chasing viral content, especially if it's not industry related. Here's what you do instead. You do search-based content. When people Google something, will your answer come up? You know, if my fridge breaks tomorrow, I'm going to go as like, how to replace, you know, filter in Samsung fridge. And there are going to be a video, I promise you, by an expert showing me, well, I've done it, right? How to change filter in the lawnmower. How to, you know, I have a pool. I'm not a pool guy. You know, how to set up a, you know, filter, how to clean green water. And you're going to have pool guys educating you. And if those guys happen to be in Minneapolis, they probably getting called from you. Because that guy put in how to clean algae water right in Minneapolis, right? That's what I'm talking about. That video still might have million views, but it's the right views. So I remember when I did a video in 2015, Owings Corning came up with a flex shingle. Owings Corning flex. They just came up with it 2 or 3 weeks out. And I decided to do a review. Within 2 weeks of that video, I have a homeowner walking in my office looking for me. He said that he watched the video. He's seen I'm from Minneapolis. He stopped by it Saturday just to see if I'm legit, right? It was Storm Group roofing video, not Roofing Insights. And then he walked in on Monday. He said, I called you guys. You didn't answer on Saturday. I'm like, you called. And then he said, yeah, we sold him $17,000 job on OC Flex. He went to Owings Corning website. He was searching for class 4 shingle. And then he went on YouTube and he just typed in Owings Corning Flex. He was looking for information about brand new product. And guess what? My review of that product wasn't the nicest. I called them out on the marketing gimmick. So Owings Corning came up with this product, OC Flex. And they put it in the freezer and then they took it out and they say, oh, it's still flex. I'm like, I call BS on it. So I bought a freezer and I put it in and I proved it. So like, I still said, I love the product, but I hate the marketing gimmick because it does not perform like they show in the screen. This is how it actually performs. Maybe they have a broken fridge. So I called out the gimmick, but the video still was positive. I still was recommending OC Flex. So this guy bought OC Flex for me for $17,000. You know, I sent my sales guy there. He measured it. Boom. So you have to come off as an expert. You have to throw yourself on the internet. But not everyone is your client. You know, here's the difference. If you're going after something that's viral, which is not hard. Like if I want to go viral, you know, you put half-naked girls on the roofs. And we have people who've done it. I'm watching it. I'm like, what are you thinking? And guess what? You'll get way more hate than you'll have positive. It's polarizing content. You will get attention, but it will never transfer to this. What do you think? Oh, look, that model is hot. Let me call
Susan. Hey, Susan, let's buy roofs from these people because of their models.
I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, you can drink on a roof. You can do a lot of things, right, to get attention. But it will not help them with the buying decisions. Yep. It will not establish you as an expert. And this is not what we're looking for. Like, even yourself, like, study your own behavior. How do you make decisions? When I'm searching for, you know, tips on my grass, on my pool, on my fridge, I'm looking for someone to the point. My time is valuable. I'm looking for 30-second answer. And whoever gives it to me earns my trust. I'm not looking for hot girl, you know what I mean? Like you have to be smart about and intentional what you put out. So be intentional, find what works. And then if you do find something that worked, double down, triple down, like on it. Like, you know, for me in 2013, it was Angel's List. It was working. Guess what? I was spending all my money, like $5,000 a month because it was working. And then... Right. It stopped and my money went to Google. You will always find where to spend money, but you have to test. And the biggest thing I would say is this, do not sign long-term contracts with anyone. Mm-hmm. And roofers are very nice, okay? And they're very, very nice to marketers. And they don't want to make marketers accountable for fake promises, for false promises, right? For me, if you're a marketer and let's say you want to sell me a website or you're selling me Facebook ads, before we sign that agreement, we're going to talk about expectations. So you want me to pay you $3,000 a month for Facebook ads. Great. What can I get in return? 20 calls a month. Great. What will happen if I don't get 20 calls a month? What if I get one call a month? Oh, that's not going to happen. Are you sure about it? Can we put it in writing? Because you want me... 12 months agreement, that's $36,000. I feel like most roofers never do basic math. For them, it just sounds crazy. $3,000 a month, $4,000, $5,000 a month. No, $5,000 a month is $60,000 a year.
60 grand, right? Yeah.
And then if you don't do it, now I'm calling you. Like, I've done it with all of these platforms. By the way, they will change their, like, they'll make exceptions. I did it with Yelp. I did it with thehouse.com because they want to sell you $350 for impression. I'm like, no, I need calls. I'm not signing 12 months. I'm in Minnesota. Like, I'm already, it's freaking negative outside. I'm dead, right? So I'm going to sign 3 months, $350 per month. And if it works, guess what? My marketing budget is unlimited for you. I'm going to give you $350 per month. Let's do it for 3 months, $1,000. But if you gave me zero jobs, I'm not continuing. If you give me two jobs for that amount per month, I'm going to quadruple that budget. I'll give you $5,000 a month, but I want to see results first. And this is how you sign a contract with them. And roofers, for some reason, they know how to negotiate with a homeowner, and they'll give homeowner everything for free. Oh, you want this for free? Free upgrade, free this. So they give it to the homeowners. But when it comes to them, when they're paying, they don't negotiate for themselves. Mm-hmm. Homeowner will get anything out of them, but they also are biggest suckers in spending money.
Well, they never track what's working, what's not. So they don't look at cost of customer acquisition, you know, and they just throw money at these platforms. We got a guy that's really successful on Thumbtack. Never heard of anybody doing well on Thumbtack.
So I did well on it. What's back in the day?
More money there, you know, and it's what's working. But if you don't track the numbers, you don't know what's working. They're trying a little of this, trying a little of that. They don't really know what's working, what's not. You mentioned a number of things. One is, we always start with a business plan. It's what do you do? What business are you in? And one of the things that I see, big problem, people are doing too many services. They're doing windows. They're doing basements. They're doing roofing, gutters. And they're probably losing money on two or three of them, and they just don't know it. So that's the first thing I think is, what business are you in? And second, you'd mentioned the ideal customer. Who are you trying to target to? You've got to know that, because you're not trying to be everything to everybody. And this is what I see so many contractors doing. Somebody asked them to build a deck as a contractor. Next thing you know, hey, you know, we're going to start building decks because people are asking us to do it. Well, do you make any
guilty
money?
Definitely guilty of all that.
That's the example I was thinking.
Do it.
Yeah, it's be focused on what it is that you do. So once we've got those things dialed in, let's say we want to put the way that I would recommend you get a marketing budget put together, and whatever that's going to be. And then we start looking at how are you going to split that up with what's working. What do you think, Dimitri, is a good rule of thumb for guys? I think one of the problems that we see is when things slow down, people cut their marketing budget. And that's when you got to keep your foot on the gas, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. You never, ever stop advertising. As a matter of fact, when you are busy, you advertise more. Because it takes time to catch on marketing. The moment you stop, the market doesn't, it's like a train. It's a heavy train. It goes like you have to push it and it has to move. Once it stopped, it takes forever to get going. Yep. So the guys stop advertising when they're busy. And then when they slow down, they want to revamp it, but it doesn't work like that. It's too old. They've been sitting without. So it's constant action. So you never stop, number one. For me, it's always off gross. So like if I make $100,000 this month in August, I'm putting 5% off, like, you know, $5,000, and I'm spending in September. If in September I did $200,000, now I have $10,000 to spend. So it's always 5%. Even if you don't spend it, still put it in aside, because you can buy a new vehicle and wrap it later, but you already have money for it, you know, from that busy month. Let's say you cancel contract today with a website, or let's say you were advertising with Thumbtack and they did a change and now it doesn't work anymore. Well, you can take that money and park it somewhere else. But having that budget and being used to, like, I got very lucky because in 2013, AngelList was working great. I tested it. So I remember gutter was my number one category. I sold $500,000 worth of gutters in 2013. I called AngelList and I asked them how much to advertise gutters. They had 130,000 members in Minneapolis. They told me price per city. And they said Bloomington, and like I gave them two cities, and they said $70 for this city to be number one in their search, and like $80 Eden Prairie. So it was very rich cities. I purchased it. I was paying, I want to say, like $300 per month. But I was doing two cities that were 30 miles away from me on purpose because I wanted to test it. Guess what? Every single day I was getting calls for gutters from those cities, like from someone from Bloomington with the address needed gutters. So I knew it was working. Then I called them back and said, I like it. So I tested for 2 months, got a tons of jobs in those cities. And I asked them how much to advertise an entire Twin Cities. They told me like $1,000 per month to be in a gutter category all over Twin Cities. You know what? I was getting 9 to 12 appointments per day for gutters for $1,000 a month. It was insane. Like, it was like I've never seen anything like that. And then I start tapping in the roofing category. It was more expensive. So roofing would be like $4,000 a month. So I was spending $5,000 a month, but I did over $900,000 in sales first year in business. And I started late. I started like in March where I moved to Minnesota in the first year in business. When you have the data and you used to spend $50,000 on something, now it goes away. What do you do? Well, you still have $50,000. Now you go to Google, you go to Thumbtack, you have the budget. And talking about planning, for me, I'm a firm believer, it's probably bad advice, but I always tell people, do not have business plan or any type of goal on the first year in business. In roofing, it's like I tell people, I don't believe in business. Here's why. Because if you set up your, like roofing, it's too unpredictable, too many factors. Let's say you set up a goal at $1 million, but, you know, three sales guys walk to your door and offer you, you know, their services. You can sell accidentally $3 million in the first year, right? Or you can have a couple jobs, couple good sales guys who will blow up your sales goal. Or if you set up your goal too high, let's say you do $2 million and then you didn't hire anyone and you sell by yourself, you do $1 million. So what I tell people is first year, you go and get as much business as you possibly can, see what you can get in this market, hire people at your pace, and then track it. And then next year, go off that number. So let's say you do $1.2 million first year. Now you have something. Now you can add 30, 40%. And next year you do one, like I did 900,000 first year, 1.3 second, 2.5, 3.9. And then we'll go from there, right? But I did not know that I'm going to do 900,000. I did not know the market. I did not know the city. I did not know the storms. Like, you don't know what you don't know. But then second year, you know, you look back, you see. And I love how you said that the roofer is doing too much. And for those who are listening, I always say that doing less is doing more. The less mm-hmm. categories you have, the more profitable you be. And the greatest lesson in business in front of us that everybody can go and check out, study Chick-fil-A and study McDonald's. Average McDonald's does $2.6 million per location. Average Chick-fil-A does $5.2 million per location. McDonald's have, I believe, 44 items on the menu. Chick-fil-A has 11. So they are so efficient. The amount of profit they have, Chick-fil-A beats McDonald's, Starbucks, and Subway, I believe, by profit. All of them combined. Why? Because they have, in the car manufacturing, Honda is Chick-fil-A. Every Honda that they make, they don't have bad models. They only have like 7 or 8 models versus like Toyota has like 36. But Toyota, reliability rating of Toyota, I think, for 86%. Honda and Subaru, 100%. Subaru does not make bad cars. They only might have 2 or 3 models, but they're all good. Because when you narrow down to what you're good at, you can do a lot of it. You can negotiate better deals for yourself, your profit margins, and you become a true expert. So when people tell me, oh, but what about drywall repairs? What about this? What about insurance claims? No, this is where you spread thin. This is where you lose money. You want to be McDonald's? Be McDonald's. but less is more.
Yep. What really changed our business was I was in a small family business out here in California, and we did everything. We do whatever, dog houses, doesn't matter, residential, commercial. After I started driving the business into the ground, I finally got smart and brought someone on that could help me, brought on a coach. And first thing we did was look at, okay, well, where are you making your money? What do you mean? I do roofing. Well, let's break out residential, break out the commercial, and let's find out. And sure enough, we were losing money in the residential. We just didn't do it well. I mean, you know, a lot of people can make a ton of money in residential. But for us, we just weren't good at it. We got out of the residential business, focused 100% on commercial, and things just took off. And so by really focusing down, and that's really what we did, we really dialed in on our ideal customer, which was an investor, which was somebody that didn't flip these buildings. And all we did was re-roofing, built out an awesome service department. And this is really what we did during one of those recessions. And we kicked ass. I mean, you know, because of that service, people, you're going to have fewer large projects going on, but people still have to maintain their roofs. They still got tenants in there. And that made all the difference in the world, was just really focusing that down. This is a no scale zone, okay? Because everybody just wants to talk about a scale. Well, how about this is a profit zone? We wanted to make profit, because I get contractors all the time. Hey, you know, what is it that you want to do? I want to do $5 million. What are you doing now? I'm doing $2 million. Are you making money at two? No. Well, you're sure as hell not going to make money at five. Okay. So we've got to get you profitable, build a strong foundation that you can build on. Then you can grow your business, but you cannot grow a business that's not profitable. You're not going to grow your way out of a shit, you know, shit business. And you know, you mentioned the first year, and I agree 100%, because the first thing that we do with somebody starting up is, one, spend a lot of time trying to talk them out of going into business. Okay. Which sounds kind of stupid, but hey, just realize, man, the odds are stacked against you big time. Most are going to fail. It's a really tough business. And you really need to think about this. I mean, I love the industry. It was awesome business, and it's a great opportunity for the right people, but you got to understand what you're getting into. If they can convince me that they're, you know, okay, great. All right. Well, here's the business plan. Stay in business for 2 years and try to make it to your third, because that's where most contractors don't, you know, they don't make it through those first 2 years. So that's what your plan is to stay in business for those first 2 years, build out a foundation, get profitable, control your costs, and make some money. You can work less, make more money. And it's just, I don't understand. Well, I understand. I mean, that's why we don't sell anything, John, is because we don't talk about scaling our business. All we do is talk about profit. Who wants to hear about that? Nobody cares about that. You know? But we want to see profitable businesses. You know, let's talk about, so that we've sold some work, you know, and we talk about our three-legged stool. Demetri, I think you've got similar program. Got to sell work, do work, keep score. And you got to have that stool solid, each of those legs. So the first thing is, nothing happens until somebody sells something. You've got to, you know, sell work. Now we're going to make that handoff, and you've got to do the work. And I see a lot of problems with that handoff where things screw up, and you know, your money is made in the sale. Production's job is to protect that profit, is just not to have slippage. And you know, so many contractors use subcontractors for their labor, and that seems to be really most of the country. California, it's all W-2 employees. So we can control that production, what happens, quality control, and so forth. What do you see as some of the problems when we are making that handoff and working with subcontractors?
First of all, you don't have leverage. Really depends on the quality of the contract, subcontracting, because you can build a relationship with the sub where they're like extension of your brand. I don't think subcontracting is wrong. It just it's all about work comp. The reason everybody's doing it because we cannot afford employees like as much as we want to. I mean, we'll see even higher pricing for all our jobs. I mean, who like I can't pay 50% on labor, right? To work comp for what? If I pay 100K, I'm gonna be sending $50,000 to work comp. That's just bad decision. Like it's against common sense. Nobody's that stupid. So hiring subs are smart. Well, Florida, a little bit different. I see you can definitely find it. There's exceptions to this rule. Mm-hmm. But if you're in business for a long time and you build it, you have like, it's like credit history, right? It can be done. The problem with the subs that I see is how do people look at you? How do you, like, what's your image? Like, in my marketing guide, oversimplify it, I brought this as an example. When you don't control the labor, like, nobody likes middle people, right? You become a middle person. You become paper pusher contractor. And it becomes obvious to outsiders. It becomes obvious to your employees. It becomes obvious to your customers. Like, for example, I would say 80% of the contractors have zero content, not even pictures of their jobs.
Right.
So think about it. Like if you're a restaurant, you should be proud of people in the kitchen, right? Of the chef. Like he's the reason why people go there. If you're a roofing contractor, your job should be, you know, putting on pedestal those installers and we're shying away from them. It's satisfying to watch people work. You know, it just is. Like there's many, many memes how one person is working and seven different departments, people around him, you know, exactly. Like your HR and stuff. But we have to make crews sexy again. We should not be shy of them. We have to give them more credit that they're getting right now. And we should advertise them. They're the one, like... One of the worst trends in the roofing industry over the last few years is posting huge checks with the commissions for the salespeople, right? Like, I never understood it. What are you trying to say? Like, that you're making too much money? Like, how do you think your potential customers looking at it? How do you think your crew's looking at it? Because they are looking at it. They are mm-hmm. checking it. You know, if I work for you and I see that their sales guy made $25,000, I mean, I'm not against big commission checks. Like, he deserved it. But this is not the content we put out. How about post a video of the job start to finish? And what I see is, and it's becoming comical, and here's the ugly truth. You see it in comments, but you don't see posts about it. Everybody hates when, like, everybody says, like, oh, Mexicans are the one who's doing the job. You know, we see white guy, you know, who is probably have like extra 100 pounds on him in the restaurant eating nice steak, but who is doing the work? Like, it's just, it's perception, it's image, it's people hate, like, those crews are talking about us. They yep. judging us, and they have a right to do so. So there, this hate. But it now it gets from our industry to perception of the homeowners. So now, like, I remember when I started my roofing company on the Facebook, people are coming, like, who's going to do the work? Mexicans, right? Because why do they do it? Because they know that we're not capable to do the roof, that we are just middle people. We have no leverage. And it's very nasty perception, but there's a way to change it. Eustace Roofing in Florida does amazing job. So they have a 15 vents. They have amazing crews. They put they have equipters. They have vents. They actually build freaking it's like work units. And if you watch their content, I mean, the business owner goes on the roof, like he talks to them. He shows them off doing the work. This is what's truly missing. And I'm telling you, like, they have zero hate. Like zero hate, because the owner with them working, he's doing his stuff. They're the biggest problem with the subcontracting is, first of all, there are a lot of abuse of labor. There are a lot of contractors who are not paying their crews. And I can't even stand it, but there's so many who will. I mean, we're talking about fining crew $1,000 per job for bed cleanup. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, I remember I had the one crew comment to me. He had 12 jobs for this company. On average, it was about $1,500. So the guy owed him like 18 grand. And he was settling with him for $6,000-$7,000 because of the few jobs he didn't clean up. He was deducting $1,000 per job for like six, seven grand. And I'm like, no, go to the homeowner, knock at the door and say, hey, I'm not getting paid because of this. Because I guarantee you, homeowner did not deduct $1,000 for those for the cleanup. And it did not cost the con. I mean, I'm okay with $100-$200 fine, maybe, if you didn't come back, if I have to do something for you. But that's the problem, that we treat those subs like crap. We don't pay them often. We don't train them. We throw them out there. And then, you know, we don't give them any credit. But then on the front end, we make this promise that our jobs are the best. We're the one who's doing the work. Mm-hmm. Pay us, hire us. But, you know, that has to go. Like, it has to change. And if anyone out there wants to really get into marketing advertising, that's what you have to do. By the way, if you go on YouTube and you type in roofing, you will see videos for, like, I'm talking about 40 to 50 minutes videos, like 2-3 guys working. And those videos will have millions of views. Why? Because people actually watch it. Yet, all the business owners ask, what kind of content would you do? What kind of, well, every company should have a video of nail guns installing shingles. That's your business. That's the video you put out. And most roofing contractors cannot produce such a video because they only use subs and have, and those subs probably don't want to be filmed.
They don't want to be filmed. They don't want to wear your shirt. They don't want to, I mean, I have a sub crew. I have 13 guys who I have known for more than a decade. I worked with them at Delaria Roofing for almost 7 years now. So I'm cleaning up job sites with Oscar. I'm carrying, you know, synthetic underlayment up the ladder. If Tavo's got it, I'm carrying it up there. If they need nails, I mean, you have to do, I'm not saying you have to be on the job site all the time and doing all those things. You can have production managers that do the same thing, but you need to at least try to sweat with them. Like they're up there, like busting their butts. And so like, yeah, I mean, I'm friends with them all, and as many of them that have Instagram, I'm friends with them. I mean, if they're, I'm sending them, you can have your close friends and send them, you know, unique stuff for the jobs that you do. And you're challenging me right now to do it more. Like I'm always trying to put, I want to do like custom jerseys for all of them. Like they, you know, they're a lot of them, I played soccer with them. Like, it's not a, you have to invest in, even if they're subcontractors, invest in the people that you work with. Like it's, people always are surprised that I've had this relationship with them for a decade. It's like, it's not that hard. If you find somebody who is willing to work with you and you trust and they trust you, just keep investing in that relationship. And don't get me started on pay. When we were starting to talk, like I started paying people double what everybody, all the other contractors were paying. And I was like, no, I know your numbers. I know how much this ladderator costs and this dump. You have two dump trailers. You have four vans. You have, like all this stuff. Like you need to get paid this much. And like, why are you doing this? Cause I'm telling you, like, look at all these things that you have to pay for. I want you to be in business so that I can be in business. Like it's a, you need to go through all these steps and go above what the industry says. Even if you're working with subcontractors, build the relationship with them.
That's absolutely why the second leg is just as important as the selling and the keeping score. You look at all the problems that come on, the headaches, contractors will cancel our appointment, you know, and go, oh, I got to run down and take care of this problem, you know, Home Depot run all this crap, rather than getting your crews together. And that's why you've always got to be recruiting. You've always got to be training. You've always got to be retaining, whether they're subs or whether they're your employees, and you've got to treat them well. And sub crews, you've got to train them the way that you want your jobs done. Well, we don't do that for those guys. This is how we do it at this company. Yep. This is the culture that we have in our business, and we're going to pay you more to do it, and we're going to give you an incentive. We've got a thing called the Perfect 10 on how they can make bonuses and eliminate a lot of this crap that we have all the time. Nobody, you know, not cleaning up, for instance, or, you know, we want to see what you're doing out there on the job. We've got company cam. These are the photos that we want to see. every time, but we're going to take care of you. We're going to pay you well. We're taking out lunch to them. You know, that was my job. My job is running my business, and I had, I don't know, 80 plus employees. I went to the job. I went to the job site every day and took sandwiches, six pack of sodas or whatever, pull over the foreman. I want to know the plan. What's your plan for today, tomorrow, and the rest of the week as far as getting this done? And I would always take one of the guys, maybe a newer guy that I didn't know. Hey, just want to get to know you a little better. What's going on in your life and so forth? One is you've got to care. You know, you've really got to like people. And these are the guys that are up there doing the work for you. Everybody says, hey, there's no people out there. There's no good people that want to work. Well, that's a load of crap. There are, but they're working for other companies. So if you have the reputation, and I think you mentioned Charles Antis somewhere along the line, or maybe it was on a video out here in California. That guy knows how to recruit, and he keeps his guys happy, you know, does a lot of stuff. And that's what we did. We had carnivals, because I wanted to have the wives and I wanted to have the kids loving my business, loving that their father's working there. And there are people out there, and you've got to get out there and let build that culture, build that reputation that it's a great place to work. And everybody wants to go come work for you. And if it's a sub crew, yeah, I want to make sure I'm on the top of the list. When things get, you know, busy, I want them taking care of me. Now, I was watching one of your videos, and you talked about different business structures and mentioned John for a guy that knows his numbers inside and out. I know that's true because, you know, well, I won't say I taught you all these things, but you are great at that. Dimitri, give us your thoughts on the numbers and what you see the contractors are and aren't doing.
Numbers don't lie, and contractors who are not successful usually are contractors who don't track anything. So if you don't know your numbers, you know, immediately when asked, you don't know your business. Numbers are business. What else to track? You know, how many, like, their numbers are business. It's equal, and you cannot call yourself a businessman if you're not good at financial. It's one thing that's not negotiable. It's one. I like Mark Cuban, how he talks about it. It's, you know, you're going to get in trouble sooner or later. And it's one thing you have to learn first. Like, if you want to understand what's happening in your business, look at the numbers, look at the picture. So if you don't know how much it costs you to find a job, if you don't know your profit margin, if you don't know your gross profit, like, what are you doing? Like, what activity? You have a full-time job. So call it a full-time job. I have a job. I go to my business. I don't run a business. If you run a business, you run it by numbers. There's no other way that I know. So few KPIs that every business owner have to know is, number one, acquisition cost per lead, right? Number two, closing rate. So if you're getting, 100 leads per month and you're paying $200 per lead, but you only close in 20%, you're wasting 80% of it. I mean, think about it. If it cost you $200 to get one job, so you spent $1,000, you wasted 800. What are you doing? Why are you closing rate is so, like, maybe your price is too high. Maybe, like, this is how you, when you look at that like that, you will not sleep at night until the problem is fixed. So Your closing rate should be anywhere from 40 to 60%. I don't think it should be 80 or 100 because not everybody is your client.
And you're too cheap.
You're too cheap. You should be closing every other one. Then your net profit margin. Like, what's your net? What's your break-even point? That's a huge KPI. Like, what's your operating cost? People don't know it. Like, oh, I don't know. Well, because here's the biggest problem, and break-even point is the most important number. Like, if it costs you to operate, let's say $50,000, that means that you have to sell to break-even, let's say $300,000 a month. So what's happening when you sell $200,000 a month? You're selling the jobs, and most roofers, they look at it as like, you know, I'm selling the job. So every job is profitable, right? That's what they think. So you sell $20,000 roofing job, you're thinking you're making $4,000. Well, if your break-even point is $300K and you only, each job will be profitable. Just like, you know, I always bring analogy with McDonald's. If McDonald's sells a burger at $8, how much does it cost them? So if their patty and, you know, meat cost them $2, so do they make $6? Technically, yes. So if they sell $8 burger, they make, you know, $6 profit, but there's other variable. How many of those burgers do they have to sell per day for that statement to be accurate? So you will make $4,000 profit on the $20,000 job, but what if you only have that one job? Everything changes, right? So in other words, if you have to sell at least 20 jobs per month to be profitable, you have to know and you have to track and chase that number. Because if you sell 10, all of those 10 will be lost. And this is what so many are get hooked on. They look at each individual job and they say, well, it's a good deal and this is a good deal. Yeah, those are all good deals. But when you're the business owner, you don't look at a single, you don't look at a single burger. You look at the picture, you look at the overhead, you look at the cost of operating it, you look at how much you're wasting in marketing, how much you're making at marketing, and only then it works. You have to know when is your red month and when is your blue month, because you will have months when you lose money. Like we're in Minnesota. I know no matter what I do, January, February, March, I'm red. I'm losing money. Mm-hmm. But then in August, you know, my break-even point was $500,000. In May, I would do 400, then in June, that's actually was lower. June always slower. And then starting July, I start hitting 500K. And then August, I'll do 800,000. So on that surplus, I'll put money aside. And that's what companies do in Michigan, Indianapolis, Chicago. But
we just had that conversation on our last podcast, John.
We did.
John's losing money. You're always losing money certain months, but you need to budget that and you need to plan for that, as you're saying.
Yeah, because otherwise you're not going to be prepared, and you cannot. A lot of storm chasers do that. They let everybody go. I'm like, if you let everybody go in the winter months, who's going to do the work in the spring, in June, July, August? Like, who? Where is the loyalty going to come from? Because my people, I had people working for me on the salary for 5-6 years. That's loyalty. I mean, salary. I'm talking about installers. I'm talking about guys who will in the winter work for 10 hours per month because there's no work. You know, this week I might give you 2-3 hours organized warehouse, but there's only so much warehousing you can do, right? In 3-4 months, you know, you will run out. But then they'll make me money in August. They'll make me money in September. So you have to track your numbers.
And that break-even cost that you're talking about, you've got to know where that is, because contractors will say, it'd be nice to have this $80,000 person in the office. Well, that's great. Okay. But you're adding $80,000 to that break-even cost now, and you're going to have to sell so much more to cover that. And you've got to know that number. And that's
times 12 months too. We're talking about times 12 months. So it's planning for the whole year, every year. And so if you're not being profitable, maybe you have the number, like it is August and you're like, oh, we can easily afford this. But then can you afford it in January, February, March? Like that's a huge deal that I've definitely been guilty of. Like I'm going to add this cost to my business. And like, it didn't make sense because I didn't focus on the 12 month number, the 12 month nut that I needed to keep.
Hey, Dimitri, I got one last question before, and sure. I know we're keeping you, but
it's all good.
Working with so many contractors, let's talk about profitability and when we're running a business. And there's a few things that are involved. The big numbers that we track is gross profit margin. That's what I want to see, because that's what we're controlling on a daily basis, is each and every one of those jobs. But when we come to our overhead, which so few contractors understand or know what it is or can recite that number, you know, just off the cuff. We've got two factors. One is owner's compensation, which we put in as an overhead cost. And two, we've got net profit. So when we talk about a well-run business, a profitable contractor, it's got to be a combination of those two. Because if I've got contractors that, we're making, you know, 15% net profit. Well, what did you take in salary? Well, I didn't take a salary. Well, it doesn't work that way. What are your thoughts? What do you see as percentages, just perhaps on some of these contractors in that small to medium size I mean, for me, I think, you know, they should be making, you know, 10% rough number, 10% salaried income for owner's compensation and 10% net profit, just as a real rough number. What do you think?
I'll tell you what I did and what I kind of preach, especially for smaller guys. I think staying humble always pays back later. I look at it like pay yourself as little as you possibly can in the beginning and then keep giving yourself raises. Like what I did is I started at, I needed $1,000 per week. So I started there like 52 a year, right? And then 60 and then, you know, I keep giving myself a raise every Friday. I just want to make sure that every Friday I have a paycheck. So when I start my own business, you know, whatever you did before, just be honest with yourself. What's your minimum wage? Like how much, like, I don't know how many kids you have, what kind of lifestyle you have, what kind of job you have before, but I think it's a good start. And as your business grow, you can always keep adding yourself more. Like I went from $1,000 per week to 11, 12, 1300, you know, and then $2,500 a week, but I have five kids, you know, it's a lifestyle. But over 6-7 years, I went from $1,000 per week to $2,500 per week. It never changed overnight. It was gradually. And I think as your business grew, but I also grew my company from 900,000 to 4 million plus. So it was not proportional. And I paid my people more than I paid myself. I think it's your business. You will cash out sooner or later, but pay yourself. Like I think have a mentality that it's a job, especially if you play a role in the company. If you don't do anything, I don't think you should be getting paid. Like you have to have a role, right? What do you do? Like, are you production manager? Are you salesperson? Whatever it is that you do, you have to get compensated. Otherwise it's not going to get work, but get compensated by minimum wage definition. And at the end of the year, pay yourself a bonus if there's anything left. For me, I left when I started my company in 2013, I had a Volkswagen Jetta, was $14,000 vehicle. I wrapped it. I have $2,000 to my name. I had nothing. And I paid myself $1,000 per week entire year. So I could pay myself 140K. Instead, I paid myself less than 60. But I bought a truck. I bought a Nissan NV, a cargo van. I hired Jesus, who worked for me for 5 years. He was doing my repairs on that van. That van's still there since 2013. It's been 9 years in a row. He's like, I sold my business, and that vehicle's still there. So I bought those vehicles. At the end of the year, when I look at my garage, I have three trailers. I have a truck. I have a Nissan NV. I look like a solid roofing company, because I could hire two people and give them two vehicles. So I say this, your business account is not your personal account. Keep it there. Pay yourself minimum wage, leave everything in the business, and then time will come when you will get a raise. I mean, it's $2,500 a month lifestyle is much better than $1,000, but I never abused my business to take money. I could... Mm-hmm. Looking back, I probably could pay myself $2,000 first year, but I would not have those vehicles. I would not have those trailers. I would always be that small guy when I became bigger guy, but just staying humble. That's my advice. And then you obviously have all your write-offs for your vehicles and stuff. You want to go on a nice vacation? Take money, but take it from the profit. Don't take it from receivables. Don't take it from future profits. Take it, you know, after, like in Russia, we say, do not split the skin of the bear you didn't kill yet. Well, you know, you have to go kill it, drag it home, and then split it. And I see so many roofers, they're making this mistake. They're making these purchases for themselves, and then they file bankruptcy or like, you know, if you cannot pay $100,000 to ABC Supply, you should not be buying Corvette, you know, or a boat, or going on a, you know, on a Mexico trip.
Well, that was a question I was going to ask you is, how many years in did you buy your first Ferrari and your speedboat? Because I think that's one of the keys to
it. As a matter of fact, I never, you know,
this is crazy.
In 2017, I bought Mercedes, and I still to this day remember how it was. And even that hurt me in a sense. Like I remember 2017, all my salespeople making more money than I am, like living in the bigger houses and stuff. And we're doing like $4 million a year. We have a storm that year. And I lived in 3-bedroom townhome, which is I bought for like $150K. So in Minnesota, it's nothing. Like I have 5 kids at the time, mm-hmm. and I live in 3 bedrooms. So it was a necessity. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy me a house. And I bought a house, 5-bedroom house, and Mercedes Benz in the same day. It was like $67,000 Mercedes GL and a house. And I bought it in the same day. And I did take money from the business. It took like $50,000 for closing. That was like 5 years into the business. It was the most expensive purchase, whatever. What I didn't know, and nobody actually told me this, but I did get a call from accounting at the time. And she said, Dmitry, you know, you have to be careful, because I posted it, of course, on social. And it's like, we had to ask some. So that week we had to ask either Saab or salespeople to, we have a lot of receivables, like $250,000 of receivables, but someone was not getting paid that week and we were making arrangement. I get, you know, my payroll probably was like $50,000 a week or something. We probably didn't collect from the job. So someone got a call from us and say, hey, we'll pay you next week. And now I'm publishing that I purchased Mercedes Benz and that. And she's like, you know, that's not a good message. And I remember, like, I did not regret it because I didn't do anything bad, right? Like, I didn't steal. I didn't, it was not me. But for once, I said, you know what? I'm going to live a little. And I'm going to actually get some reward myself and my family with this house, which was like $450,000 house. You run $4 million business, you can buy a $450,000 house. So it wasn't bad. But and if you look at all examples in the industry, but even that was very like hard on me. I'm like, I couldn't be shy because, you know, it's me. Like I live American dream. I want people to see it. It wasn't bragging, but it was like, hey, guys, everything is possible. Work hard. You get anything you want. But even that kind of hurt me a little bit because it was not perfect in the business yet, but I still maxed out.
I like that. You know, I mean, and it's so true, is that stay humble, control your costs. And that's the thing. Don't get, this is what happens with so many contractors that get a little, you know, money in the bank and they think they're going to go out and big buy shot. A new Corvette and so forth. Exactly. But one thing we do always talk about in our coaching is the 2 week, we call it the 2 week vacation. If you can't take a 2 week vacation off from your business, you don't have a business, you've got a job. And this is so important about building a saleable company, as we've been talking about. You're building a business that has value outside of yourself, because if you can't take 2 weeks off, your business has, there's no value in it. It relies on you. So you're going to be there forever. It's not something that you're going to be able to sell and walk away from. So this 2 week vacation is something that needs to be planned. It forces you to build an organization that can run without you, to have the systems and processes, to have the right people in the right jobs. And when you're growing this, and even small company, I mean, John, you do a great job on this. You've automated so much. You have outsourcers, which I'm a big fan of. What say you?
Yeah. So no matter what size, figure out a way to take yourself out of it. I mean, you need to be growing. You definitely need to be growing and always looking at your market and, you know, setting your marketing, all that has to be done. But you do, I mean, from the beginning, I knew, just survive and then grow it so that you can actually step away one day. I mean, don't think about it too much, but at least work super, super hard so that you're able to sell jobs at the right profit margin, to put the right people in place, to pay them well, to have a marketing budget, all those things. It has to be geared towards that. You can't work forever. You should work extremely hard to get to the point where you're able to step away. And that's how I've always viewed it. I mean, this is an entity that it's a baby that I have to take care of. Just like what you guys were saying about, you know, don't take money out of the business. That's a separate thing in my life. It's Delaurier Roofing. It's not me. It's not the Delaurier family. So it's really important that I take care of that, and I make sure that I mature it to the point where it can go out into the world and be by itself. And I'm not there yet. I have a lot more to grow, And I'm, you know, nobody has it figured out right away. And I'm really excited about future growth. But that's gotta be your vision. If that's what you want, you have to always focus on that, to make sure you put everything in place so you can step away.
Well, Dimitri, this has been fantastic. I mean, I could talk to you for hours here about all these things. I still got so many questions, but great information. Anything else you want to add before we find out what you've got going? Tell us about, I know you've got the directory, you've got your school. What's going on and what's your plan for the future with your business?
Directory is my biggest business. That's what I'm building. It's my biggest platform. I have a really big team, spending about $30,000 plus per month developing it. So we have app for the homeowners ready, Android, Apple. We're building app for the contractors now. It's great tool. Like, I don't give better recommendations. If I recommend a contractor, I put my own money behind it. It's $20,000 guarantee every transaction. I will never, ever sell leads to anyone. So if you're the contractor on directory and you get a job and you get paid, you owe us 3%, like credit card fee. So it's 3%, not on leads, but on a complete job. So we're pretty much like an Uber of construction. So we recommend HVAC contractors, roofers, floor guys. We have them all. Now, to put that much trust and that much money behind every contractor, you have to vet them. So you have to have at least 20 Google reviews. You have to maintain it. We actually have algorithm that tells us if you start getting better reviews, we'll read them. It flags. So you have to maintain 4.5 stars. And once you start getting better reviews, we read them. Like, I mean, it's one thing that, you know, dispute with the homeowner over money versus your price is too high, right? Because contractors who go out of business, like we have one claim right now, contractors went out of business and I'm paying lien. You know, they found them on directory. So building platform, my competitors are Thumbtacks and Home Advisors. For years, I've been on those platforms. I'm essentially rebuilding AngelList, if I'm honest with myself, because AngelList was so good. And I was so pissed when they went out of business in 2018 when they sold to Home Advisor. I'm like, there's got to be a better way. Because in the United States, we don't have a solid platform that everyone would recommend. You know, if you think about, you know, taxi, it's Uber, right? Like, you know, we have categories in other industries, but in construction, finding contract, like if you would ask me in 2015 where to find HVAC guy, I would send you to AngelList. Today, I'm not going to send you to Home Advisor. You know, I'm not going to send you to BBB because all of those platforms have tons of bad contractors, players. I'm building directory in a way like if you need a contractor in Indianapolis for your mama's house, you know that Dmitry will not let you down. You know that, hey, it's by contractors, for contractors. I hate that phrase because there's too many services like that, but it truly is. If you call, like, I want you to be proud to be listed and I want you to be proud to recommend it. Like, because there's so, I cannot stand scam. I can, especially construction scam. I've heard so many stories. When someone hires someone with a hard-earned money and they lose that and they have to start over, it's devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've seen the other side. I'm like, no, I'm going to recommend you someone good. And if they're not going to do it, I'm going to hire someone else and I'll pay for it. So that's the promise. We're giving contractors tools. Like, if you cannot sell $20,000 guarantee, like to the homeowners, as you know, it's better than BBB. It's better than anything out there. We're like insurance company, so we're giving contractors tool to sell this, but also we back every transaction. And 3% is very reasonable. I will never raise it, and I think it's enough for our business model.
I know you use a John, and kicks ass for you. Tell us about your conference that's coming up in Orlando pretty quick. And as a contractor, why would I want to stop in and come check it out?
Dustin Bigler, founder of Apple Roofing, last year came to me at the end and said, Dimitri, I did not know that so many nice roofers exist. Like, where do you find these guys? We have a record that we're very proud of, zero jerks ever attended. Like zero accidents. Yeah, like you will not find one negative guy. Like we attract people like us. Like I attract certain demographics, and those guys, they're just the nice. I don't know, like I don't take credit for it, but many conferences say that there's zero sales, but everyone sells. You go on a stage, like you see, like they advertise zero sales, and then start seeing on Facebook they're selling from the stage. Like what gives? Like last year has zero. I didn't even like. I have online school, zero sales. I didn't even mention it. So we truly give everything away. It's my fourth year doing it. Last year I lost $40,000. So when you have speakers that cost you $100,000-$150,000 per speaker.
Great speakers.
We go all in on food. We go all in on speakers. We absolutely don't sell anything. If you sell on my stage, you will be banned forever. And we have the nicest crowd. So every vendor who comes vetted by me, and I say no to 70-80% of vendors because there's so many services. For them, buying $3,000-$4,000 booth is nothing. But for me, if I put my, like the same as guarantee, if I put a vendor in a hallway and you do business with them, I feel accountable for it. Like I recommended them. You can actually call me and say, Dmitry, that guy took my money, ran away, didn't deliver. Sir, I want to hear that complaint. If I brought someone to the conference who is not a good guy, and you know, I'm not going to let them sell to roofers. So I'm not going to take their money because there's too many conferences that you will get screwed. You go to IRE, there's so many services that you don't need, but they can buy a place and they can bring 20 salespeople and they can sell you. No, like for us, I guarantee every vendor who comes, every speaker, and I guarantee that you will actually learn something and not be pitched.
I mean, you know, you got John and Proline are going to be there. There is a service, a product that everybody should use, by the way. It's awesome. You guys have done a killer job. So you're going to be there. You got the booth going, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I've got the booth, but I really am excited. I mean, it was my first year was going last year, and just, I mean, within Marcus Sheridan was the first person I heard, and I was like, all right, I'm done. I've been here for an hour and a half. I've got everything I need. And it was, I cannot say if you're in this space, you need to go to that conference. I've been to IRE. I've been to other conferences. This is a different place, and it is true. Like it's the environment, the energy. You go sit down at a table to eat the really good food, and you're sitting with other like-minded people in the roofing industry, and there's no, you know, egos there. It's you're all trying to help each other learn. And I still have friends from last year that were constantly on social media talking and learning from each other. So yeah, I can't say enough good things. I'm excited to be there with Proline. Yes. I'm excited just to learn from other speakers and everything I can from other contractors there.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Well, Dmitry, thanks so much for coming on. I learned a ton, and you do so much for the industry. Fantastic. And I might even have to get off my butt and go out there and check out this
ice conference. Bath. Gotta get an ice bath.
That's the key. Yeah.
We're going to find a sauna for you and ice bath, and let's get it.
Yeah, and some paddles there when I get out and have a heart attack, you know, jumping into that cold water. But good for you, man. All right. Well, take care, and we will see you soon, Dmitry. Thanks so much, and thank you, John.